Hello and welcome to a new episode of Publishing Insight, an interview podcast about working in publishing. I'm Flavia, your host, and in this episode I interview Sile Edwards, literary agent's assistant at Curtis Brown. Sile tells us about her main tasks and responsibilities and the skills which are important to become a literary agent. She also talks about her favorite initiatives by the Publishers Association, where she worked before, and Arts Emergency, a mentoring charity that helps marginalized young people succeed in the creative industries. After the recent Black Lives Matter protests in the US and Europe, Sile points out how important it is to truly listen to the voices of Black people in the publishing industry and act on it. For any comments or feedback, you can write me an email at publishinginsight@gmail.com or get in touch on Twitter and Instagram at flamflam91, FLAM91, using the hashtag publishinginsight. Publishing Insight is an independent project, so if you'd like to support it, you can donate on Ko-fi, subscribe on your favorite podcast app, and leave a review. All the links mentioned are in the description box of the podcast and on my website, www.publishing-insight.com. Happy listening! Hello and welcome to a new episode of Publishing Insight. Today, my guest is Sile Edwards, literary agent's assistant at Curtis Brown. Hi, Sile, how are you?
Hi, Flavia. I'm good. Quite tired and overwhelmed, but generally okay.
Yeah, can imagine. And thank you very much for finding the time to be on the podcast with me today.
Oh, no worries. It's really great to be here. Thank you for having me.
No problem. So I'll start with the first question. Can you tell us about your academic and career path so far?
It's pretty basic. I went to university, I studied English, and while I was doing that, it was a three-year degree, and while I was doing that, I worked as an usher at the Young Vic Theatre and did quite a few publishing placements like during that time. A few of them were unpaid, so I was working at the Young Vic to, you know, keep myself like so I could eat. And I was studying English. And then in my third year, I stopped working at the Young Vic. I started working at Arts Emergency, which is an arts and mentoring charity. And then I got a job at the Publishers Association. I think it was just before my last exam when I got the job, and I started working there not too long after. So I hadn't graduated yet. I took some annual leave later that year to actually graduate. A year or so later, I saw a tweet from Kath Summerhayes, who I work for now, and she was looking for a new assistant. And the tweet was something like, "Does anyone want a new job working for me?" or something like that. And I was like, "Yeah, I do." So I applied for that and never looked back. I guess never underestimate the power of social media. That's when I got both my jobs at the Publishers Association, and with Kath, I saw both of them on Twitter.
That's great, and great advice for our listeners as well.
Yes, follow people on Twitter.
Yeah, thanks for sharing your story. And what does a typical day as literary agent's assistant at Curtis Brown look like, and what are your main tasks and responsibilities?
Oh gosh, I don't know how many times people say this, but no 2 days in an agency are exactly the same. There's so much, my job is so many different moving parts altogether, that it's, you know, every day is kind of different. I think the base of my job is admin and reading. I keep track of everything so that my agent doesn't have to. So I guess a typical day would start with me checking the diary or the inbox to make sure that A, that there's nothing new in there that suddenly needs my attention, and B, that, you know, everything's in order, all the meetings for the day are set up, and any queries or things I'm working on in my emails are all as they were when I last left the office. And then, assuming that there's nothing new that needs to be done from my inbox or the diary, I'd go to the invoice log, which is a spreadsheet, see who owes our clients money and who needs to be nudged to pay invoices, and who needs to be sent invoices, because it's all about timing with those. And Then I'd move on to the contracts log, which is another spreadsheet, and see which contracts are outstanding or waiting for a response or need to be finalized and sent. And then I, you know, do whatever needs to be done to get those moving. I mean, I guess all of my responsibilities come back to making sure that everything we do, or we're doing our best to get our clients' books from manuscript or proposal to publication, and that they all run smoothly. So, you know, I'll work out the finer deal points in a contract with the help of my contracts department, who are amazing. And, you know, I'll finalize that paperwork and make sure that once that's finalized, the clients get paid correctly, and that, you know, all of their meetings are set up and that everything's filed so that we can find it if we need it at any point. And also the website. I'll keep the website up to date, because there's no point doing all of this if people don't know what our clients are up to.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really interesting. Thank you very much.
No worries.
What is your favorite project you have worked on at Curtis Brown?
This is a very difficult question, because they're all my favorites. They're all really great, and being able to work on, I work on quite an eclectic list, so I can kind of get involved with lots of different things, and they're all really interesting and have their own kind of thing that make me really happy and glad that I do what I do. I think so far there was a book called Living, or there is a book called Living the Dream by Isabel Dupuy, and it is an amazing, amazing novel. It's so well written. It really takes you on a journey and gives you a glimpse into a world that you might not have considered before. It's about two immigrant women living in a really affluent area of London, and finding that they're, you know, they are living the dream, and finding that that dream comes with a lot of strings, and those strings aren't always, I'm trying to like say it without giving it away, but those strings aren't always the best thing. So that project was really, really great to work on. It got placed with, I think, the perfect publisher. It's just a, you know, a beautiful love match between Isabel and her editor at Jacaranda, Valerie, who is excellent and really got the book and just was able to turn it from manuscript into such a gorgeous package of a book. And being at her launch was amazing, seeing Isabel just, you know, walk around and be her lovely self and have a room full of people who were just really excited to bring the book into the world. It was just really, really special. And so I think that's been my favourite one so far, but, you know, they're all my favourites.
That's great. Thank you. And what advice would you give to recent graduates who would like to work in a literary agency?
Experience is good. There are internships that you can apply for in agencies. We do one, which is 3 months, and a lot of agencies now are offering internships that you can apply for. And a lot of agents who are senior agents now, or you know, full primary agents, were interns at the start of their career. So that's definitely a big part of this section of the industry, is doing an internship when you're a fresh graduate. It's one of the best times to do it if you can do that. But if you're not able to, there are other ways. I think getting any publishing job that you can, so that you're in the industry, you're finding out about books, about what people want to read, you're developing your taste. A big part of working in a literary agency is, you know, knowing what people want to read and finding that, and knowing what you like to read and finding that too. So knowing what you like to read and what you like to see in a book, and really being able to confidently talk about it, because working in an agency at any stage, you've got to be really passionate about the book that you're producing, or that you're trying to convince someone else to read. So being able to talk about books is really, really important. And anything that can get you, that you can prove you have attention to detail, because it's always the finer, small points that really, really make a difference when you're working in an agency, whether that's in a contract or a small thing that you put in a pitch letter to an editor. It's the small things and the detail and the attention to it that can be really, really important. So any kind of experience that gets you that, running your own blog can really be good for that. Working in an office, like any office at admin level, can be really good for that.
That's great advice. Thank you. And in your opinion, what are the most important skills to develop to become a literary agent?
I think the attention to detail, like I said earlier, is really important. You need to be able to, you need to be sure of your facts, because when you're negotiating, which is another big skill of being an agent, negotiating is so important. And when you negotiate, you need to know exactly what you want and what you're willing to give up and what you are determined to fight for. And all of those things come back to having your points really, really ironed out before you even start. So that attention to detail, organization as well, being organized and able to find things is really important, because clients will phone you and go, where's this, or what's this, or how do I, and having all the answers is quite important. And so you need to make sure that you're organized, because the easier things are to find, the easier thing information is to share. I think those three are the top ones, and then there are loads and loads of others, but being an agent is a subjective thing and everybody does it slightly differently. So I think also self-confidence is quite important to be an agent. I think any literary agent that you speak to will have some level of confidence, whether that's in themselves or in what they do, what they're able to do. And that's not to say you have to be an extroverted, kind of loud, gung-ho type person. It just means that in those quiet moments when you're doing something, you know that you can get it done, even if you have a panic attack about it afterwards, which is totally what I do. But you just need to know that when you're doing what you do, you're doing it to the best of your ability, and that will bring trust and build trust between you and your clients, which is so important. And building trust isn't really a skill that you can develop. It's just something that's quite inherent when you're working with other people. And so I think that confidence in yourself and your abilities is quite important.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much. And in the past, you worked as communications assistant at the Publishers Association. What were your main tasks there?
I had quite a wide-ranging job at the PA, because the team was quite small and close-knit. So I had a really quite lovely experience of being able to get involved in lots of different things. So I did a lot of the admin for their different groups that met. So the PA has lots of groups of publishers that meet and talk about different issues across publishing, and there's loads of information about that on the website. I could talk about that forever, because I spent a lot of time taking the minutes and notes for those meetings and really learning about the groups and what they needed. I got involved in some of the campaigns. So there was Work in Publishing Week and Axe the Reading Tax and quite a few, but those were the two ones that I mainly got involved in while I was there. And I did a lot of social media management, planning, content creation, because it was a communications and marketing job essentially at its heart. So it was all about communicating what the PA did and understanding what they did, and then telling everybody about it and getting everybody to understand the value of UK publishing.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Thank you. And what are your favourite initiatives organised by the Publishers Association?
I think the two I mentioned were definitely my favourites, because I got to work on them so much, I really got to understand them. And they were both had really, really good causes. So Work in Publishing Week is a week-long campaign in November, I believe, which is just getting everybody involved as much as possible in shouting about publishing and why it's great to work in it and how to work in it, to really give people looking to get into the industry an understanding of what it is that we do, what we all do across the industry, and how all of our different jobs come together to create a book that people would buy from a bookshop, hopefully. And so that campaign is really close to my heart, because it's something I've always struggled to find, is ways into publishing and understanding how to get in and what to do. I kind of shaped my whole university experience around getting a job in publishing at the end of it, and I did find it hard to get information about, you know, what I needed to do to get where I wanted to be. And so I think that campaign is just great for anybody trying to get into publishing. It's people really do get involved, and there's a lot of information that you can get from it, and it gets bigger every year. So I'm really excited for this year's one, even though I'm not working there anymore. I'm really excited to see what they do this year. And Axe the Reading Tax was a campaign that I'm not sure if they're still running anymore, because they achieved the goal, which was to get ebooks to be zero rated tax, because they were taxed at, I can't remember what, but they were taxed in the UK, and it wasn't fair. It was a tax on people who aren't able to read physical books, and so removing the digital tax means that they're zero rated just like print books are, and that makes it a bit more fair for people who can't access print books. And so that was also close to my heart for all of those reasons.
Yeah, because physical books don't have VAT, whereas ebooks used to have it. It was just recent news that the government decided to put the VAT for ebooks as well to zero, basically.
Yeah, and I think that that was a lot of hard work and lobbying that I was involved in the beginning of that campaign, but then I, you know, left before it was came through to completion this year. But it was a very strong campaign. It was a lot of work behind the scenes that went into it, and it that was one that I was just really, really proud of, watching it go from what it started as to what it ended as was, you know, amazing. So
yeah, absolutely. And you're also a trustee at Arts Emergency. Can you tell us more about this charity and what your job there entails?
Arts Emergency is such an amazing charity. They organise mentors for young people who might not otherwise have a way into the arts, because at every step of definitely my career, and I think everyone, there's been at least one person who's held a door open for you, or, you know, been your cheerleader as you've broken a door down. And that's so important. And a lot of people who want to get into the arts, want to have a career in arts, or don't even know that they want to have a career in arts, but have all the skills to work in any of the arts sectors, it's really difficult for them to find a way in if they don't have the contacts or the knowledge of, you know, it's quite coded and there's loads of rules that you don't even know exist before you're working in a job in the arts. And I think that it's really important to get people to understand those rules and to be able to work around them if they have to. And that's exactly what Arts Emergency gives young people the tools to do, and supports them all the way through to 25, I hope that's right, all the way through to 25, with a mentor or with services to help them get and then stay in jobs in the arts, or you know, do project arts projects and things like that. And so I'm a trustee, which means that I sit on a board, well, not literally, I sit around a table once a month with other people who have a really vested interest in Arts Emergency, and we talk about the way it runs and talk about the different things that should be happening to keep the charity running. And it's really, really great. I love Arts Emergency, and I have been involved with them from, I think it was age 16, right through till now, and I want to continue being involved with them for as long as they exist, because they're absolutely excellent.
Yeah, it's a really important initiative. I didn't know about it, so I hope that some of our listeners will go and look for it and browse the Arts Emergency website and find useful resources.
Yes, definitely do that if you're looking to get into publishing. There are definitely things that you can ask, and they're really, really friendly. And if you work in publishing already, then sign up to be a mentor, because that is invaluable to people. Or you could donate, because they are a charity, so they really do, you know, benefit from people donating anything they can, whether that's £2 or £200 a month. It's, you know, any way you can get involved is great.
The Black Lives Matter movement has had great resonance in the UK in the past few weeks. What kind of changes would you like to see in publishing to reflect that for good and to become a more diverse and inclusive industry?
So this is obviously a very, very sensitive thing and a very contentious point, with a lot of people trying their best to get involved and not always getting it 100% right, and also people not realizing that this is not a new movement that's sprung up over the last few days or only started existing yesterday. It's something that people have been campaigning for, dealing with, and trying to get people to understand and truly, truly listen. So I think that my views are not, I want to say that my views aren't the definitive views on this. I'm not going to try to solve a whole industry because there's a lot of systemic and structural problems that need to be addressed. And that is what I would like to see, I guess, for the industry to really, really hold a mirror up to itself and say, you know, why is it that when we talk about diversity and when, you know, people try to explain where we're going wrong, we have such a problem with listening to that and we have such a problem with actually changing that? I'd really like for the industry to understand where that comes from and what that is about and take practical steps to fix it. I'm a bit fed up of reading statements. I want to see some real tangible change, and I want to see people being hired at those senior decision-making levels. And when I say people, I mean Black people. I want to see Black people being hired at those senior decision-making levels. I want to see a lot more diversity in those positions where you can click your fingers and change something, and where you can open the gates and the doors to people who have historically been excluded. And not that they haven't been there, or not that they haven't been using their voices, not giving them a voice, because we have voices, but listening to those voices and acting on it and standing aside sometimes, I think, it's a very difficult thing to do, to realize that you're not the right person for something, whether it's a project or whether it is an opportunity to speak. But standing aside when you realize, at first realizing you're not the right person to do something, understanding that, sitting with that uncomfortable knowledge, and then standing aside to let someone who is the right person do that. I'd like to see more of this. I think that's it.
Yes, that's really important, absolutely. And I also really hope that all the protests that we've seen in the last few weeks will encourage real change and cultural change also in our industry.
I hope so. I also hope that we can stop needing to see really, really traumatic and deeply upsetting things to spur change. I hope that people can feel like they can just come forward and say, this has not been easy for me and I'd like to change it. And for that to be enough for acknowledgement and change in the future as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And last question, what are you reading at the moment and what's your favorite book of the year so far?
Oh, this question I think has been the hardest because I really don't know how. Can I have two? Can I be that one annoying person and go, can I have two?
You are among book lovers, so if you want to recommend more books, it's fine. It's totally fine.
So at the moment, I am reading The Friend by Dorothy Kumson. She is such a brilliant author, one of my favorites, and just such a beautiful person. So she was doing the Ice Cream Girls read along, which was another one of hers. And when we finished that, I was like, it's not enough, I need more. So I'm rereading The Friend, which is a really great whodunit kind of crime thriller, I guess. Please don't hate me, Dorothy, if that's wrong genre. But yeah, that's very, very good. It's about a group of mums. One of them dies, and throughout the whole book, you're kind of going, who did it? Which one of you did it? And it's really, really interesting, set in Brighton. And that's what I'm reading at the moment. My favourite books of the year so far, because Flavia said I could have two, are the one's fiction, one's non-fiction. The fiction one is Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reed, I think is her name, and I'm really sorry if I've got that wrong. But that book, I absolutely devoured it. It was just in a weekend. I
sat myself on the sofa by the window and I did not move until I finished it. My poor cat was like scratching at the floor going, please feed me. I was like, no, reading this book, it was great, so great. And the non-fiction one is called Self-Care for New Mums, which is one that as a new mum I was gifted by a friend, and it's exactly what I love about nonfiction. It's small, it's beautifully packaged, it's got a lot of knowledge. It was written by two midwives, I think, or a midwife and a doula, and those are two people who are really involved in caring for new mums from pregnancy to birth and after. And it's so well written. It's got everything that you want to know, from practical to emotional, physical knowledge that you would love to have as a new mum. And it's just been really comforting to read. And it's non-fiction can be quite, you know, hit and miss with people, because sometimes people don't want to read something that feels a bit heavy or a bit too factual. And it's just the perfect blend of sounding like your friend is talking to you and sounding like your doctor's talking to you. So I really enjoyed that, and I am enjoying it because I keep picking it up, putting it down. Really
good. Oh, that's great. Thank you very much for your recommendations. Congratulations for the baby.
Yeah, thank you.
So that was my last question. Thank you very much for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been lovely.
No problem. Thank you very much. For this episode of Publishing Inside, hope you've enjoyed listening to it and found it useful. If so, please subscribe and recommend it to a friend. You can find all the links mentioned in the description box, along with my email address, website, and social media handles. Hope you're having a nice day, and I'll see you in the next episode.